And now our featured speaker is Ruben Chavez from Ventura. Ruben, alcoholic. And grateful for their gift. For me, I need to always acknowledge anytime I speak in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or at the podium that this is a gift. For me to stand here without any drugs or alcohol in me is truly a gift. A gift of a new way of living, a gift of a new life. In a book, it talks about the gifts. In 12 and 12, it talks about the gift. So I always acknowledge it. I want to tell Christian, before I thank anyone, I want to thank Christian for how she's treated my wife and I as we're kings and queens. Amazing. She does such a wonderful job. You've made us feel so welcome. Thank you. And the rest of you, thank you so much for making us feel welcome. You notice there's about a half dozen of my friends from Ventura, and it's amazing. These men, I get the honor of walking the path with them, and tonight is just another part of this journey that we get to share. After you hear my story, you'll be kind of amazed because of where I come from, how this could be possible. They drove 300 miles round trip. 300 miles just to come hear me speak. How's that work? I always like to welcome all the newcomers. I think there's four or five of you. Welcome. You know, I used to identify myself as an alcoholic addict. And then one time in my morning group at 7 a.m., my old-timer came up and said, "You know what? Every time I hear you say you're an alcoholic addict, don't you realize that's like you're saying you're dumb and dumber?" and then you add it. Dumb's just good enough to be around here. So newcomer, I want you to look around you right now. Look around. We're loser friendly. Look around. We set the bar very low here. Very low. That's why I'm up here tonight. So, the laughter. The laughter. That laughter right there is the sound of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. That's what kept me in the ruins of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to you, I was broken. I was broken. Had long hair. No teeth. Salvation Army, thank you. Had torn pants on the knees. And I told you, well, that's the style up in Santa Barbara. They were just torn pants. And then to top it off, I had a pair of shoes that one of them, you know how the sole falls off and it starts flapping when you're walking and it flaps and flaps. I had those, and so I had duct taped them, thinking that you guys would never notice. That's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys said, "Come back." It's like, who are these people laughing at 7 o'clock in the morning? It's 7 o'clock in the morning, there's 50 people in this room and they're laughing. It had been years since I had laughed. Years. And you people were laughing. And I thought you were laughing at me. It's all about me. So why not? First meeting, you guys are laughing at me. You don't even know me. You didn't even give me a chance and you're laughing at me. So I'm hoping to keep you awake. And I'm hoping that I have a message of hope and a recovery. And I always like to start off with a story. Young Mary's driving down Grand Avenue and she's going to the pharmacy to see her friend, her homeboy John. He's a pharmacist. And young Mary parks her car and goes into the pharmacy, and And she tells her friend John, "John, I need a pound of strychnine." And John looks at it and says, "Mary, that's a lot of strychnine. What are you going to do with that strychnine?" And she goes, "I'm going to kill my husband." And John, the farmer, says, "No, no, don't say that. They'll put you in jail. No, they'll put me in jail. No, I'm not selling you nothing. Are you crazy?" And so she reaches down in her purse and sadly puts her head down, and she brings out these two pictures and hands them to John. And John's looking at the pictures, and he realizes it's a picture of his wife with her husband doing the wild thing. And it's like, oh. So he gives back the picture to young Mary and says, "Oh, that's different. You have a prescription." So let me give you 2 pounds. The laughter. The laughter. Alcoholics Anonymous. The smiles. The joy. The happiness. You know, I was born and raised in Santa Barbara, and I got sucked up in that cycle of dysfunction that my family was. My dad was an untreated alcoholic, and that didn't make me who I am. But it's just part of the story. We all have a story. We all, every one of us have a story. You have a story. You have a story. You have a story. And all of them, I believe, one of the greatest gifts that we receive as we get here in Alcoholics Anonymous is our stories. Because I believe our stories bring us closest to the human spirit than anything else. Closest to the human spirit. Our stories. And so we have a story, and so we have speaker meetings. And so my story is just a story. It may not be like yours, but it is like yours, and it is the same. And it hopefully it's a story of redemption. It's a story of recovery. It's a story of restoration of our families and our lives. So I came, I was born and raised in Santa Barbara. And I hung out with people who had names like Brute, Boxer, Halloween, and those were the chicks I hung out with. Hey, true story, gotta tell the truth. That, those were my homegirls. They're pretty tough. So, you know, I grew up in this family where, my mom, she was single with 6 kids, and she was lucky to snatch this guy up, and he just wanted to take care of her family. He was a little Tex-Mex, so I woke up in the morning at 5 o'clock listening to Mexican music, and it was like, I didn't want to hear no Mexican music. I don't even speak Spanish, you know? I was always confused. It was like... I wanted to be a hippie surfer. I didn't want to be a greaser. I don't like that stuff in my hair. And so I was always confused. And so every morning I woke up to Mexican music and the smell of tortillas, because my mom would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and roll out these homemade tortillas so her husband would get burritos to take to work, and all of her kids took burritos for lunch. I didn't want no stinking burritos. I was tired of burritos. So me being confused, I went to school and traded my homemade burritos for a bologna sandwich. Without cheese. Now, is that insanity or what? That's, man, I'm telling you, I was confused. A burrito for a bologna sandwich. You know, confused. That's what I was. You know, I ended up, we always talk about this moment of clarity. Mine came years after being a juvenile delinquent, a drug addict, a thief, and years of going in and out of institutions, I finally had a moment of clarity. I was sitting in a federal court in Los Angeles, and I heard the bailiff go, "United States of America versus Ruben Alfred Chavez." And I went, "Oh, shit." I said, "Oh, shit. That's not cussing, really. That's not. That's." And I go, "I think I might have crossed that line." You know that line that we put? All of us got this little line. And next thing I hear, this federal prosecutor saying, "Your Honor, this is a violent armed robber, uses a gun and robs banks." And I'm thinking, and then he goes, "He's a very sophisticated armed robber." And I'm thinking, come on, sophisticated, who, me? And I'm thinking, I'm going to tell this judge, because I'm defending myself. You know, I'm a smart guy, so naturally I didn't need a lawyer. I defend myself. I'm going to be the new Hispanic Johnny Cochran. You know? So I'm just waiting to tell this judge, "No, Your Honor, sophisticated, I robbed a bank with a BB gun." Sophisticated? Granted, it was a BB pellet gun, but sophisticated? And then to top it off, Your Honor, my getaway car was a bright yellow 10-speed bicycle. Now tell me, is that sophisticated? No, it's kind of dumb, you know? I mean, and actually, because I'm alcoholic, once I did it once and got away with it, well, let's do it again. And so that was my wonderful claim to fame. I robbed banks with a BB gun and yellow 10-speed bicycle, because you give me a drink, there's no telling what I do. I end up in like Philadelphia. Yeah, that's a long story. So I'm telling, I want to tell him, "Your Honor, I'm just an alcoholic. You know, I'm just an alcoholic, and I do a little drugs, you know, social bleeding, you know. You know, every day, just a little bit every day. But so I do these things, right? And I'm not really a bad guy. Naturally, I did tell you I defended myself. So I wasn't too surprised when they sentenced me to 41 years to life. The only thing that upset me was, why 41? Why couldn't it be 40? Come on. Let's make it an even number at least. You know what I mean? 41. Come on. 40. How about 40? So I wasn't too happy when they told me 41 years. I wasn't laughing either. So off I go to prison. Our co-founder, Bill Wilson, stated, and I quote, "In a sense, all alcoholics have been prisoners. You didn't have to go to jail. You didn't have to go to prison. You created your own prison in the house when you went down a liquor store and you got that bottle and you went back home and you went in your house and you locked the door and you sat and poured that first drink and just drank that drink. But you didn't want your neighbors to see, so the blinds were closed. The door was locked. Or you went down to that bar and that was your little seat. That was your seat for 8 hours every night because that was your little prison." So in a sense, we've all been in prison. So whether you've been in San Quentin like I have, these wonderful places, Leavenworth, you all had your little prisons too. So I ended up going to prison. Prison's an ugly, ugly, horrible, dark place. Whatever you've ever seen on TV or you've heard, I couldn't possibly describe the darkness in prison, the loneliness. You guys know about loneliness. You guys know. You guys get so lonely. What do? You isolate. Let me fix this loneliness. I'll just go and isolate by myself. See, we're smart. You know, we're smart people. Thing about prison, they got places for guys like me. I'm a 6 foot three and a half. Right now I'm a lean and mean 205, but at that time I weighed 240 and I liked fighting. I was a fighter always. And I wasn't a guy with anger. I went right to rage, always. Rage. You ladies know about rage. Some of you, I can see you through frying pans. And let's not forget the vases. You know who I'm talking about. You know I'm looking at you. I see you. You know about rage. And you guys that have punched that wall or that door and put your fist through that wall, you know what I'm talking about. That's not anger. That's rage. So I was full of rage. I mean, I had a 40 life sentence. Well, it should have been 40, but I had a 41 life sentence. And it pissed me off. And I was rageaholic. I was just, it didn't matter if you were an inmate or a guard, I would sock you up because I didn't care. I was done. It was over. My life was over. Think about it. Any day of the 80s, from January 1st, 1980 to January 1st, 1990, do you know where you were? I know where I was. Every day. San Quentin, wonderful place. The darkness. They don't have mirrors in prison. What they have a little piece of polished tin that's welded into the wall. And so no matter how much you rub it, try to shine it, you still get a distortion. It's blurry, it's a distortion. And for years, I just looked in that mirror and I just saw a distortion of myself. And that's what prison made me. It distorted the real me. I couldn't see myself. It was horrible. The loneliness. The darkness. How does anyone survive that? How does anyone walk through that jungle, that rage? I have a wonderful God. It's amazing. The dude never left me. I just stopped talking to the guy. After I got in a few little incidents, they sent me to a security housing unit in San Quentin. It's called the Shoe. It's a single cell, 6 by 8, 6 feet by 8 feet. And you're there by yourself. And they sentenced me there for 6.5 years by myself. Never touching a human being, never touching a baby, never touching another human being. The guards would never put your hands on you. 6.5 years. Full of darkness. God's been amazing to me. I had all that time, and so he put in my mind, you know, getting the law books. You think you're a lawyer. So you got yourself in this mess. See if you can get yourself out of the mess. And I got the law books, and I'd start telling the guards, bring me one at a time. And they would bring me one law book, and I would research, and I saw in one of the books it said San Rafael Civil Liberties Union, and they had an address, and every week, one letter, every Friday I would write them a letter. What about this case number? Doesn't that affect me? What about this one? Doesn't that affect me? Every Friday for 2 years. And finally there was a guard at my cell, and he says, you got a visit. And I said, I don't get visits. He says, no, it's an attorney visit. I said, no, I'm a lawyer. He goes, I still thought I was Johnny Cochran, right? He goes, no, a real lawyer. So I put my arms behind my back and went to the bars, backed up and cuffed up, and he took me to a visit, and it was a lawyer. And he said, for 2 years you've been writing these letters, and we've been passing them around the office. We got a few laughs out of it. And I told him, well, thank you. I think, is that a compliment? He goes, well, you have something here. And I had found this one little technicality, and they knocked off, out of that 41 years, they knocked off 27 years in the appellate court. So I only had to do 14 years. Only 14. That's all. Added on the other 11 years I had done before then, 25 years in my life, in and out. Just like my drinking, in and out, in and out. Drink, fall down. Drink, get up. Drink, fall down. I did a lot of that. So, I think I see that watch, but I like to take mine off. I'm the guy that's known as the guy that can talk a starving cat off a loaded tuna boat. So, I can talk. I can talk. So I'm going to put my watch down here just to remind me, because you guys will be here to midnight. Say, dang, this meeting's long. The lady was back there snoring. I mean, yawning. Okay, none of that stuff now. Okay, I'm going to keep you awake. So, one prison story. Just one. After I had served that isolation time, I won my case, and so they transferred me over to federal prisons, institutions, and I got to visit places like Leavenworth, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, Talladega, Alabama, Memphis. I can go on. See, their thing over there, if you mess up, they just throw you on a van and move you to another prison 3 states across the United States. And that way you never get visits and you never get mail, and they don't care. They'll transfer you in a minute. And so I was one of those guys. I like drinking. Somebody made some homemade hooch, some Pruno. I always had 2 packs up front. Yeah. When you break it up, bring me mine, because I'm a drink. What are you going to do? You can't eat me. You just can't eat me. So I'm a drink. You make it, I'm going to drink it. I don't care. You're going to take 6 months? A year? Good time? I don't care. Because I got 40 years. So every convict always has a stash. This is kind of difficult to describe, but use your imagination. We all have a safe on our body. You're kind of sitting on it. That was pretty clean, right? Okay. Okay, so we're on the right picture, right? So every good comic always has a stash up his safe, right? Because there's always Christmas, New Year's, your birthday, and so you always want to get some drugs and put it up your safe, and that way something happens, they can't find it. And so it just happened, it was Christmas, the guy invited me to his cell because he made a 5-gallon bucket of Pruno and invited me for Christmas drink, and his mistake was we drank a lot. But he sold a lot to where it was all gone. And I was still thirsty. And I told him, you're wrong. He goes, no, you're wrong. I invited you. I said, well, you invited me to a party, and you didn't have enough. And so I sopped him up. That's the kind of guy I am. Invite me to your house and I'll beat you up. That's just how I am. So they sent me to isolation again, right? Well, January 5th, I'm there. That's my birthday, my belly button birthday. And the Raiders are playing Denver in the playoffs. Yeah, I know, that's a long time ago. The Raiders are playing Denver in the playoffs. And I'm in a solitary confinement, and I'm just down in my visiting suit, my boxers, underwear, because I'm not getting a visit. And there's a spot about this much underneath your door where they slide the tray to you like a dog. That's how they feed you. And the guard, way down the tier, had the radio on, and you could hear the game. So what's the perfect way to watch a sporting event or to hear a sporting, to be loaded, right? So I go in the safe, and I just happen to have, because wherever I go, I have my safe, no matter what to do. And so I go in my safe, and I bring out this one marijuana cigarette and a little match and a little striker, and I smoke this marijuana, and I'm blowing it up in the vent, and man, I'm loaded. And it's like, okay. So I lay down on the ground on that concrete floor, and it's nice and cool. And I can hear that game, and I'm listening to that game, and it's like the thought went in my head, I'm loaded, I'm listening to the game. Man, life doesn't get any better than this. Life doesn't get any better than this. You can't scare an alcoholic like me. We see it all the time. We're going to take your kids from you. We're going to take your job from you. We're going to take your driver's license from you. If you have one more drink, what's alcoholics say? Well, how about if I had a half a drink? just a half, and then we'll do that deal, okay? You're not going to scare an alcoholic. You're not me. You're not going to. I'm a drink. I'm a use. You can't punish me. I punish myself worse than anybody else. I ended up coming to Alcoholics Anonymous not because I came to get sober. I came to check you out. That was it. I was in county jail, Santa Barbara County Jail, one more time. I had gotten out. I'm released from the federal prison after I do 14 years. They tell me ride a bus home from Memphis, Tennessee. That's like 3 days. Are you crazy? So I call a friend and I got a plane ticket and I fly home. I'm in violation of parole. I owe a mandatory 3 years and 6 months. And so what? I don't care. I'm already violated. And so naturally on the plane, they sell those little drinks, you know, those little bottles. And I'm lucky and there's an old lady sitting next to me. And so when they come by with the drink cart, I tell the stewardess, yeah, I'll take a double and my grandmother will take a double too. She said I could have hers. So by the time I get in LA, I'm drunk. I'm stinking drunk. And so what? You're not going to eat me. So I end up, a couple years later, I end up in Santa Barbara County Jail. And one of my homegirls who got sober worked at the county jail, and she saw me on the roster. And she went back to isolation because I was in isolation because I happened to kind of escape from the escape-proof jail years back. Years back, and they still don't like me. I don't understand it. It's their fault they let me out. Come on. So she goes back there, and she's at the cell, and she tells me, aren't you tired? I said, tired? This is like 90 days driving under influence. I'm resting up here. And she goes, you know what? Why don't you take a leap of faith? All men of faith have courage. And I said, you saying I don't have courage? Hello, I'm the guy that robbed the bank with the BB gun? I'm the guy with the yellow chest beat bicycle? Courage? She goes, not that type of courage. Why don't you try the sober living? I had no clue. Anyhow, I went down there and you guys, 7 o'clock, that first meeting. It's called the Keep It Simple meeting in Ventura. It's my home group, and it's more than a home group, it's my family. I invite all of you to come visit at 7 a.m. on Laura in Santa Clara. On the weekdays, you'll see 50 alcoholics there at 7 o'clock in the morning. On the week, this morning there's 85 at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're serious about our sobriety. We like starting the day off early. We talk about solution. We talk about the steps. We talk about how we get sober and how we stay sober. In the big book on page 143, it says, it said, it does still say, let me see, yeah, it says it, that we have to have a change of heart. In order to stop drinking, we must have a transformation of thought and attitude. You guys don't believe? Check it out, page 143. I read that and I knew it was talking to me. I knew that I had to change, have a change of heart. I knew that I had to have a change of attitude. I knew I had to change. Step 6 and 7, I love 6 and 7 because we humbly ask, to change me. Change me. You know, people say I want to keep on character defects. Different strokes, different folks. For me, I want to get rid of all of them. I don't want to be that guy in that cell in San Quentin. I don't want to be that animal. I'm not that person. I'm not that person anymore. Next month, Rick Wilson is my sponsor. I've been working with him for a few years. He needs me. You can tell him I already use all of his best stuff. I won't use his. He talks about the steps. I'll tell you something about the steps. Step 4, I always tell my guys, write it down. And then some of them, they're brilliant, right? And they go, well, what about the stuff I don't remember? And I tell them, don't write that stuff down. I tell you, we're brilliant. We're smart people. So step 5, I have a guy, he's on fire. He's just working through step 4 and calling me a question and I'm telling him, okay, this and this. And he's on fire. He's ready to do step 5. And I don't hear from him about 2 weeks. I'm down in Ventura and he's working up in Santa Barbara. And I call him, hey dude, hey, you should be way past due on step 5. Let's do it. He goes, well, I kind of already did it. I said, what do you mean, kind of already did it? He goes, well, they brought this guy in. He works at the mortuary. Mortuary, dead people. He goes, yeah, they brought this guy in. And and I did it with him. I said, yeah, true story. I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. A dead guy. Did you know the guy? He goes, no. The guy was dead. He goes, yeah. And you kind of did your first step. You know, that's like saying I'm kind of pregnant. Did you do it? Did you not? And he goes, yeah, I did it with him. So I could see the shock on my face, right? I'm glad I was on the phone. So, you know, I had to ask him, did he give you any feedback? What about the eighth and ninth step? Did he make a list for you? Have you called him since? It's kind of funny. I haven't seen the guy ever since then. I wonder why. Yeah, this program is about doing it our way, not your way. So I get here and you guys tell me to stay and I stay. I haven't gone any place. I peeped the game. I saw the game. You guys had the game. Newcomers, if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and think that you're coming here to save your life, you may not. But if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and begin to believe that you must give your life, then I guarantee you, you'll stay sober. See, this thing's about giving, not about taking, not about receiving. It's all about giving. Steps 1, 2, and 3. Get right with God. Steps 4, 5, 6, 7. Get right with me. Steps 8 and 9. Get right with others. Step 10, 11, 12. Stay right. It's our steps. They are wonderful. Think about the last time you've been passionate, really passionate about something. I am so passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous. I am just so passionate. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So passionate. I'm one of the luckiest men in the world. I have friends that drive 300 miles late night. I have a beautiful wife, yeah, who just makes me laugh all the time. She fills my heart. This tough convict guy, right? That's what I am, right? Some big old tough convict guy. This guy that's been San Quentin. So all of that, Tracy, all the tough ones. This guy has spent over 25 years in prison. Well, newcomers, listen, I'm gonna break it down for you right now. I'm gonna tell you what it's all about. Young Timmy was 9 years old. He woke up that morning and he was determined. He was tired of being tired. It was done. He was just so tired. He was tired of being in pain. He had made his mind up. Today was going to be the day. So he got up and he went to his piggy bank. He got dressed and put on his tennis shoes and his pants and went to his piggy bank and he emptied it out and put it in his pockets. He picked up his cardboard box and he started walking down the road. He knew where he's going and he had a determination. Not long after, he ended up in front of a pet store. And in the pet store, it had signed puppies, $2. Young Timmy had been there before. He had looked in the window several times. Those puppies knew him. He walked into the pet store and he told the owner, "I want to buy a puppy." And the owner said, "Okay, son." And he went to where the window was and he started bringing all these healthy puppies. You know, the ones that jump on the window and buy me, buy me, buy me. The healthy ones, the ones that are really healthy. And the owner started picking out these healthy puppies and showing young Timmy. And young Timmy said, "No, no, I want that puppy. The one way in the back. The one all curled up by himself. That's the one I want." And the owner goes, "No, son, you don't want that puppy. He's broken. No, that puppy's no good. No, take one of these puppies." And young Timmy said, "No, I want that puppy." And so the owner said, "Okay." And so he brought the puppy up and he went up to the cash register and gave Timmy the puppy, and Timmy put it in his cardboard box. And young Timmy said, "How much for my puppy?" And the owner looked at him and says, "For that puppy, $1. And young Timmy said, "No, no, that my puppy's worth $2. No, And he pulled out his pennies and nickels and quarters and he counted out the $2 and he pushed it to the man. He says, "No, my puppy's worth $2. And he put the puppy in the cardboard box and he started walking out the store. And he got to this, just about to the door, and the owner said, "Son, wait, son. Why are you buying that puppy? He's broken." Young Timmy put the box down and he turned to the owner and said, "When I was born, I was fast. I was healthy. Man, I could run the fastest. I could jump the highest. They picked me first always on all the teams. And then I got sick. And they threw me away. They don't want me anymore. So he leaned down and pulled his pants leg up. And underneath you could see these two chrome shiny pieces of steel that he had a brace on his leg. He says, "I got sick. And they threw me away. But I know when my puppy can't stay up and I'm running and he can't stay up with me, I'm going to wait for him. I'm going to stop and wait for him. And when my puppy can't jump over that little fence, I'm going to lean down and pick him up and put him over the fence. And when my puppy falls and stumbles, I'm going to reach down and pick that puppy up. And I'm going to love that puppy." Kind of like what we do around here in Alcoholics Anonymous, huh? That's what we kind of do. I don't know about you guys, but when I grow up, I think I want to be like young Timmy. Thank you for letting me share.
Let's have another round of applause.